Welcome to the Resilience Unlimited Show, your go-to podcast for empowerment and growth. I'm Coach Dr. Lauren, founder of Resilience Unlimited, inviting you to join our transformative journey each week. This space is specially crafted for high-achieving women, specifically women of color, where we can feel seen, heard, and part of a thriving community. This podcast is your compass for emotional regulation, understanding your purpose, and living unapologetically authentic. Ready to invest in yourself? Welcome back. We are here with another episode. This is episode 19 of the Resilience Unlimited Show. So I'm excited to invite another guest to the platform to really share a little bit about Black women and wellness. So before we kick off this amazing conversation, I want to encourage you all, if this is the first time you are listening or watching, please hit subscribe, please comment, like, share. It means a lot to me to support the business and the podcast. And also too, if you are a dedicated listener, be sure to share this podcast, any episodes that resonate with you, with someone else, because as I always say, you never know, this could really change someone's life. So very excited to have a Dr. Kimber Shelton on the show today. So I want to welcome you to the show. And can you introduce yourself in this space?
Happy to be here today to talk about resiliency. I'm Dr. Kimber Shelton. I'm a licensed counseling psychologist. I have a practice in Texas where I provide virtual therapy to individuals and couples. And I specialize in working with cultural diversity, LGBT issues, trauma, and relationships. Have books and a whole bunch of other fun stuff happening. So glad to be here today.
Yes, and we will get to that fun stuff at the end of the episode, but you all are here to listen to the question and get the good word. So I always, as I say, I read the question because they're always meaty. They always have a lot to kind of unpack. So let's kick off. Dr. Kimber, so as a Black psychologist, with expertise in cultural diversity, LGBTQ plus issues, and trauma, as you stated, how do you emphasize the significance of resilience for Black women in supporting diversity and wellness initiatives? And what outcomes have you observed regarding Black women developing resilience through your interventions?
Yeah, thanks. That's such a good question to reflect on and think about. I would say probably at any given point, 80 to 90% of my practice is Black women.
Okay.
And the majority of those Black women coming in are coming in already with very high resiliency and have been for a long time and have always been described as strong. So really living in that superwoman complex, a strong Black woman schema. And my work with them is almost trying to do the reverse of being resilient and resiliency refusal to a degree.
Okay.
Of trying to implant the ideas that we don't always have to be strong. We don't always have to be put together. We don't have to always have the answers. That it's okay for us to be vulnerable, for us to show weaknesses. That there's consequences that come along with that, being able to deal with the consequences of what happens when we don't do everything or something doesn't get done. So almost the opposite of being resilient, so that Black women are allowed to have more space to be human and to receive other people's help and care and consideration.
Well, and it's interesting because the whole strong Black woman, you know, it really, I mean, I'm sure it has its origins back to like slavery, but what is your definition as a psychologist working with the population that you do? Like, what is your definition of a strong Black woman? Because I think that's really good to unpack as well.
Yeah, well, absolutely. The origins of that strong Black woman, in my definition, tied to when our enslaved African ancestors were arrived in the U.S., that for Black women, Black people in general, but speaking specifically of Black women, for us to do the things that we were doing or to work the way that we were forced to work, there was this concept or this narrative that was put on us of, look how strong they are. It doesn't hurt as much, or they can take these things on. And we could because we had to. So it was so much about strength. It was more about survival.
I was going to say survival. Yeah. Yeah.
And it was a narrative that we didn't necessarily prescribe to, or wasn't a narrative that we, that didn't originate with us. It was a narrative that was put on us.
Right.
And to be strong, to be able to work in the fields or be in the house or have a baby and then go right back to work, that we were forced to be strong. But it was the narrative that someone else put on us. And then over the course of time, we internalized that because these narratives about Black women have persisted.
Right.
We have to be strong in overcoming microaggressions that we experience.
Yeah.
And yeah. Be strong to survive through pay disparities. We have to be strong when we experience health disparities, that Black women, the maternal mortality rate is 2 to 3 times higher. So we're not getting the health care that we need. We have to be strong to be able to persevere through all these things. So it's still not a narrative that originated from us, but then we've adopted that narrative because this narrative is a lot better than some of the other narratives about us being mammies or Jezebels or welfare queens. So we might adopt this. And it's worked for us to a degree. I mean, the fact that I sit here today and say that I'm Dr. Kimmer Shelton, that's come from me being so strong and overcoming things and overcoming obstacles. So there's a lot of success that comes with that. But then there's also a great cost to it as well.
Yeah, I would definitely agree. And I think over time, I have come up with the, well, let me take a step back. So I used to go to these events. They were called, it was about women and health, but like well-being, holistic well-being at Johns Hopkins. And it was like an event they would put on every year. And I would go with my aunt and my grandmother, and they always had like a keynote. And it was just a wonderful day of just being around women who just wanted to understand. Mm-hmm. And I remember going to this one, workshop, and it was very depressing. And I think it was like eye-opening for me, but it was basically about how Black women, like, just, we don't take care of ourselves and we're sick, and you know, because we're caring for everybody else. And I'm sitting here listening. I might have been like in my like mid to late 20s. So I didn't have kids or anything. And I was just like, well, I take good care of myself. Does this mean I'm going to, like, I had all these thoughts in my head. But then if I think back, you know, that really is the strong Black woman. And it's like, no, but actually over time, as I've gone through my journey, and to touch on, you know, I wouldn't be Dr. Lauren either if I didn't have certain things I went through. But I think a strong Black woman is really being vulnerable, you know, really saying like, you know what, I am struggling and I need help. And, you know, I don't know what to do, or I really need to go to the doctor, like whatever it is. I think that, to me, vulnerability, people will downplay that as a strength. It almost is like seen as a weakness, when really, no, it's like, I can't do everything and I do need help.
Right. Yeah. So I think it's redefining what it means to be a strong Black woman. And a part of that redefinition is we get to be whole Black women. We
Yes.
get to be strong. We get to be vulnerable. We get to be boundaried. We get to be flexible. We get to have a range of emotions. We get to be.
Yeah. I love the range of emotions. That one's a tricky one, though, because I feel like sometimes it's like, well, she's angry. No, we're just passionate. And if our white female counterparts said and acted the same way, she wouldn't be perceived as angry. But again, to your point, that's a microaggression. You know, it's how do we dodge all of those? So to pivot the conversation from the strong Black woman to now the wellness piece, last week's episode was all about radical self-care. And I think, you know, if we look at the surface, you know, Black women, we like to get our hair done, which my hair is looking a hot mess, and I cannot wait for the braids that I'm getting next week. But that is a part of, you know, the fabric of who we are. We like our nails, and we like all the superficial things that make us look good and feel good on the outside, but that's not really the self-care internally. So I'm curious to know, you as a psychologist and a professional in the field, like, what does that overall holistic wellness look like for us Black women?
Yeah, self-care, that is a piece of it, but really what we need to be focused on is our healing.
Yes.
We heal. We need our soul, our spirit, everything to be cleansed and to be healed, and really focus on those things. And then the icing is those things that we get to do that make us feel good about ourselves, but inside, being more focused on what are the things that make us feel well, what are the things that bring us back into our worth. So like with the radical healing, really focusing on with the radical acceptance, focus on radical healing with Black women.
Mm-hmm.
Radical healing is, yes, we live in a world where there is oppression and we're not always appreciated or seen or valued, and that those hurts and pains are there. And 2024, as far as I know, they're not going anywhere anytime soon.
Yeah.
And I will be vulnerable. And mm-hmm. I will take care of myself. And I won't limit myself. And I'm going to be free. So being able to balance,
yeah,
and to resist all these messages or those narratives or ideas that are here so that we can live more freely and more liberated in this space. Being able to heal ourselves, even though the world or the environment that we are in is not being healed.
Yeah. And, you know, my theme, and I've said this on a few episodes and just talking to some Black girlfriends of mine, like my theme this year is I am enough, I do enough, I have enough. And I do find that, like, and it's how we're programmed, right? And so it took me over three decades to be like, I don't need to do the most. I don't need to be extra with X. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, I already accomplished boom, boom today. That's it. I don't mm-hmm. need to try to, you know, find the cure for cancer before 5 o'clock. I mean, it's just not feasible and it's an unattainable goal. And I think those are the internal struggles that we have that I feel, you know, it's just like, well, how do I measure up? And I also, I want your thoughts on this too, because I realize the more I have these conversations weekly, I'm still processing the systemic racism and microaggressions I really lived in every day for 2 years at this last school where I was working. And, you know, it's the whole concept of how do we continue to keep our, I don't even want to say sanity, but like know who we are, but not have to compete with white people to prove I can do the job, you know, like I am credible. Cause I feel like that's a balance. I can't speak for Black men. I'm sure that is the case too. But I mean, like I struggled with that where I was the one with the doctorate, but my leader was so incompetent and was so unprofessional, but yet I was the one that was always on the hot seat. And I'm like, I don't understand. I can do your job, my job, commute, build a business, like, and you're sitting here and you can't even do one thing, you know, like, I don't know, I'm going on a tangent, clearly, you know, I'm still trying to heal, but I want your thoughts on that. Like, how do we balance that and still feel like I'm enough?
Yeah. And what you're saying, I think that's just so common with so many Black women's experiences, especially for high achieving.
Yes.
And experiencing the same thing myself. I think back to graduate school of like literally doing the most, having the best paper, signing up for the most volunteer opportunities, taking on as many supervisees as possible.
Mm.
And a day where I'm burnt out and stressed,
mm-hmm.
my counterparts, they still graduated that same degree and they were not having to do all those
things. Yeah.
So part of that being self-inflicted, but then also if I wasn't doing those things, would I have been seen as less than or inferior than my counterpart? So what is that balance? Just going back to the idea of worthiness, that we are already worthy. And I think that we forget that, especially when it's being reinforced that our worth is in things that we're producing and the things that we are doing, when really our worth is already there. It's always there. And there's that ancestral strength and healing from those ancestral traumas. So I think about my enslaved grandmothers. They didn't have the opportunity to rest. They didn't have the opportunity to, what is my worth? And let me live in my worth.
Right.
Things. My mother, absolutely a strong Black woman, but she was just working so hard all the time. There wasn't time for herself. There was no room for vulnerability. There was not time for her to take care of herself. So with that, the work's already been done.
They've already done
all that hard work. They've been strong enough. They fought through those things so that we can now have space to be within ourselves and to live within ourselves and to know that we are worthy, that their worth was within them, even if they weren't able to have it fully blossom. So to allow our worth to blossom out of respect for ourselves and then honoring that ancestral strength that we have, just knowing at our core that we are always worthy, regardless of what someone else thinks of us or expects of us. And when we are worthy, then we can see things like those microaggressions. And
yes,
it is really important because the microaggression is Someone says something to us, and we have to do that mental process of, wait, was that a microaggression, or is it me, or
yeah,
past, so this person is there, gone, and then if I bring it up, am I being overly sensitive about it?
Exactly.
Mental process versus
it's exhausting.
It's exhausting. It's mentally exhausting. That insight, though, of being like, well, oh, that was a microaggression. So I can either let it right there and move about my day with what I'm going to do, or I can address it in this moment. But I'm not doing that mental exercise to get me out. I'm thinking about it at home. When this person, they're enjoying the rest of their day, they're not even thinking about those things anymore.
Right. No, it's so true. So true. So I was a psych major undergrad, and you know, you're a psychologist, and I'm thinking about the whole concept of our ancestors and our mothers and all of that, not having that time to process, you know, my worth and all of that. I think about Maslow's hierarchy of needs. You know, how often are we as Black women getting past the physiological stage of just the basic needs? And as I am building out my coaching program, like those are critical pillars where happiness, as I said, to go back to the hair, like it's not just about the externals and looking good. You know, it's like, how am I feeling inside? Am I happy with where I am in my life? And if I'm not, how do I do more introspection? And I'm not saying everybody's goal is to reach self-actualization, but I mean, you really can't pour from an empty cup. And so if you're just constantly worrying about, you know, the basics, and here's another thing too, even if you have the resources, and let's say, you know, you can pay for your kids to go to private school and all of that, but you're not drinking enough water, you're not sleeping enough. Like those are things that are not, to me, non-negotiable. Like I can't stand when people are like, oh, you're too young to be tired, or like you can sleep when you're dead. And it's like, are you fucking kidding me? Like what? No, I don't want to sleep when I'm dead. I know I'll be asleep when I'm dead. Like I want to rest so I can feel recharged and refreshed, you know? So I don't know. I don't know your thoughts on that, but like hearing about, like I said, our ancestors, like there really was no Maslow's hierarchy of needs. It was like,
And I love the idea that our ancestors' greatest wish was not for us to be successful or to be strong or to be even super smart. Our ancestors' greatest wish was for us to be able to rest, because they didn't get to rest. So to be able to choose to rest. And to be able then to rest, we have to resist these things that are being put on us and saying that we have to be resilient all the time in these particular ways. I think about Simone Biles and Naomi Osaka, who at the height of the pinnacle of their careers are saying, ooh, I need to rest. I need to take a
second.
I'm overwhelmed. And profound, because we would expect, and I think what was expected of them is that as a Black woman, they need to keep pushing, they need to keep going, they can't take that time to rest or to recharge or to be vulnerable and be open in those ways. So profound in that they did. However, if I had $30 million in my bank account, I think I'd be able to say, you know, I'm going to rest.
Right, I'm going to take a month off, take a sabbatical. No, absolutely. And actually, last week, I was talking to a guest about the book, Rest is Resistance, Trisha Hersey. And I, for me personally, I don't know if you've read it, like that book changed my life. And with my ADHD, it takes me a long time to read books. And I've now accepted I can't read. I audiobook because I need to be moving, because I'm very much a kinesthetic learner. But I finished that book in like 4 days. And I literally was like, I need to rest. I would be on the couch. I'm like, don't do anything. Like, take it in. And it was a game changer for me. And I really was like, wow, this is why I was so burnt out. This is why I was so irritable. And I want to break any dysfunction that was passed down because of the exhaustion. Like I said before, if you're not resourced, you can't provide and be fully present when you're at that survival state. You know, you're just like, okay, we got to do this. And it's like, that's, for me, that's no way to live. I don't want to live that way.
Yeah. Yeah. And like you're saying too, there's this pressure of, I'm supposed to be reading books like this, or I should be bringing in this information this way. And that resistance is, no, that does not work for me. I don't have to do it. way. There's other ways to do it. So we might not have that $30 million in the bank account to say, I'm going to not do these things, but we have to find the ways that we can allow our resiliency to come out through our resistance. And that might look like, you know, I don't have any time for myself. I just want to go on a walk and just be able to be by myself. But I have, so for a lot of Black women, I have children. And many of us are in that sandwich generation where maybe we've been taking care of our parents. So there's not that space, but that resistance may be, okay, kids, I'm going for a walk. If you want to come with me, just know I'm going to have my headphones on. I'm just going to be walking and doing my thing. You enjoy your walk and do your thing. So it's finding ways that we can resist. It's at work when Black women are being asked to do 10 more things than their white counterparts are, than what men are being asked to do. And being able to question, hey, why are you bringing this to me instead of bringing this to Michael?
Right.
To present those questions. Now, you still might do it, but at least you are questioning what's going on and starting to point those things out or starting to reshape those narratives. I have 5-year-old twins. Again, my mother was that superwoman. She worked. She was at games. She was washing clothes. Our house was always clean. My resistance is my house is not always clean.
Right. Exactly. And you have to accept that. I hear you. Yes. I absolutely hear you. Yeah.
Going on.
You're like just enough for the visual, right? No, I hear you. I definitely hear you. And, you know, to the point about the boundaries, I know you didn't use that word, but I mean, I am in a season of saying no if it doesn't align with what feels right for me. And it took me a long time and I'm still discovering it, but it took me a long time to be like, no, this doesn't align with me. And then the next step was I always felt like I had to explain why I said no. And so I'm finding myself, if it's in an email, I'm like, no, I can just say this doesn't work for me. Send. Like, that's it. I don't need to talk about if I want to spend time with my daughter or I need to go take a nap. Like, they don't need to know that. The answer is no. Yeah. So I think that is so important for us to really, I honestly think the issue with us Black women is we need to, the healing, but I think we need to give ourselves the permission to say, it's okay. I'm tired today. I don't have to do X. And if you have a spouse and a partner, like maybe they take care of dinner that night, you know, or maybe they do the bathing of the kids or whatever it is, because that is exhausting. Yeah. So, yeah. No, yes. No, yes, no, exactly. Full sentence. Exactly. I should just have an episode called No, period. And talk about it. I love it. Well, Dr. Kimber, we are coming to the end of this episode. And this was such a rich conversation. And as I said, very impactful. And I always learn so much whenever I talk to guests every week. But before we close out this episode, I would love for you to share your coaching, your consulting, your practice, anything that you feel would really benefit and help the audience listening.
Yeah, so if you are in Texas and you're looking for a therapist, please feel free to reach out to me at www.kls-counseling.com or on Instagram and Facebook at doc.kimber. Reach out to me there if you're looking for a therapist. If you're a mental health professional looking to improve your skills in working with Black women, please go online and get the Amazon bestseller, A Handbook on Counseling African-American Women that helps therapists improve their cultural competence. That Black therapists, we only make up 2-4% of mental health professionals. So it can't just only be Black people who are competent in working with Black people. We need all therapists to be competent. So this book is focused on that, on all of us being competent and providing that culturally sensitive care to Black women. And then I also do speaking and workshops. So reach out to me for those things as well.
Excellent. And as I always say, those links are in the show notes. So be sure to check those out on the YouTube channel or wherever you listen to podcasts. And hopefully you've pulled over or you've gotten to your destination. So I want to say thank you so much, Dr. Kimber, for being a guest this week on the Resilience Unlimited show. And again, please share this episode with anybody that you might feel would benefit from it. It could save their lives. You never know. And be sure to subscribe, hit the like, all that good stuff to support this Black-owned podcast. Okay. So thank you all for tuning in this week, and I will see you all next week. Thank you for joining us this week on the Resilience Unlimited show. Be sure to hit subscribe wherever you get your podcasts subscribe on our YouTube channel, and follow us on social media. See you next week, Divas. And don't forget, stay resilient.